WSBTU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Sort of an overcast, gloomy-looking kind of day, and that sort of fits after that performance, or whatever you want to call it, last night in Norman, Oklahoma. Hello, everybody. Bill here in the studio. Dan said he will be in, just depending on, you know, exactly when the Troy women's basketball team arrives in Troy, or arrived in Troy. He said they were expected back in Troy around 2:30. Then he would be coming in. So Dan will be in at some point here during the show. Jason Caldwell, our regular Wednesday sort of co-host in hour number one, is getting ready to help out once again. He's going to be on the broadcast tonight for Auburn baseball as the Tigers host West Georgia over at Plainsman Park. So we'll talk with Jason here in just a minute or so and get his thoughts on everything going on around Auburn Athletics. And then in hour number two, we'll Adam Cole, who said he's not going to be able to make it to baseball tonight, is going to be here in the studio. So got a fun show for you. We'd love for you to join in. Right here off the top, though, we're going to go to the Drive Hotline and welcome in our good friend from Auburn Undercover, part of the long time covering Auburn athletics. As I said, he'll be over helping out. He and Brad Law will be on the broadcast for Auburn baseball tonight over on Wings 94.3. That'll be a 5:45 airtime, 6 o'clock first pitch against West Georgia. So Jason has those duties on tap for tonight, but he's got a few minutes for us here on the Wednesday Drive. So we'll get to the Drive Hotline. Jason, how you doing today, man? Doing pretty well. I've recovered from last night. Man, that was really disappointing. I was hoping. And I think as everybody who, you know, is associated with Auburn or follows Auburn was hoping that Kentucky win would be something to really sort of, be a spark, and that Auburn could go out and get that win last night in Norman. But they led for a total of 15 seconds in the game, and that was 5-4. I mean, there was just such a disappointing performance last night for the Tigers as they fell to Oklahoma 91-79. Yeah. Oh, no, by no means. Well, Arkansas was one of them. Yeah, I guess you're right. That's crazy. Right, maybe the top two teams, yeah. Hmm. Right. Yeah, if you need to simplify or whatever, change things in some way. Right.
Do whatever you got to do.
Yes, you have to allow yourself to give yourself the best chance to win. And right now, but we after about 5 minutes, you know, oh, this ain't happening tonight. And it's not like Mississippi State early on. It's too late. And I mean, they've given up 50 points and a half 5 times this year. And there was a bunch of 46s and 47s
right,
and 49s
right.
mixed in there. It is really hard to win when you put yourself in a huge hole like that. Like they were able to do it at home against Texas. Did the same kind of thing there. But now it's just inconsistency in every phase of the game. And you go from Keyshawn Murphy scores 25 against Kentucky against a bigger, more physical team. And last night I looked up and in his middle of the second half and he had 4 shot attempts.
Yeah, he finished with 6 shot attempts and 4 points.
Yeah, 6. Like a guy had 25 against Kentucky the other night, and he can't get the ball in his hands. And so like there has to be some things to do that you can do. And right now they're just, you know, it's just inconsistent. And hey, look, like I said, we knew this team was not going to be last year, and this team was not a Final Four type talent team. But they're also better than what we've seen for a lot of this season at times, and that's the frustrating part.
Yeah, this team is, they're 6-9 in conference, and it should be about reverse. They ought to be at least 9-6. You would feel like just from the talent that they do have, and you know they have some pretty good offensive metrics according to people that do that. But when you say inconsistent, that carries over to the offensive end as well. You mentioned Keyshawn. I mean, Tahad has 4 points last night. He hits a three 40 seconds into the game, doesn't get another basket for the remainder of the game, and finishes with 4 points. You can't have, two of your starters. Actually, three of Auburn's starters scored 4 points each. Tahad, Keyshawn, and Sway had 4 points each. And I know that Keyshawn Hall had 26 points, but most of those came after Auburn was down 15 in the second half.
Yeah, no, and look, there's things you look at. Like I said, and it's not all on Tahad, but he's the guy that comes back with the most experience. He's the guy that you're looking to be one of those guys that sets the tone. And I did some numbers today. He's 27.8% from three. He's made 50 all year. Of those 50, 27 have been in 7 games. So that he has 23 in the other 21 games that Auburn has played this year. 17 games with one or zero threes. The guy that you're counting on to be a scorer has had 17 games with either one or zero threes. Like I said, there's lots of issues, but he had to be a guy for them that they could count on. And you would much rather have a guy that scores 15 every night than 25 and then 6 the next night. And that's been this team. You know, Keyshawn Hall was steady early on, and since then, since that Florida game, he hasn't been the same player.
No, you're right.
And it's inconsistent across the board. It's defense, it's offense, it's shooting, it's touches. And when they're good and when they're moving the basketball and everybody's involved, this is a really good offensive team. We saw against Alabama. That team was scoring points. They're moving the basketball. They're doing all that. And then at times you look up and it just becomes a one-on-one game.
Yeah, it becomes an ISO game where the ball isn't moving at all.
Yep, and that's it. And that's what happened. And that's how you get guys that their only baskets come off trash or rebounds because they're not involved in the offense, and that was a lot of the night last night.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, I was saying yesterday before the game, I mean, I don't know how many games that we've had that where you feel like, wow, you've got multiple players really clicking. Obviously, defense is so critical, and Auburn has just been – they've been bad. I mean, just quite frankly, they've been bad defensively, so they're going to have to outscore people. But there haven't been many ball games when you look up and you go, man, we got 3 or 4 guys that are really on a roll tonight. Usually it's 1 or 2, and that's been it, especially through this 6 out of 7 losses stretch.
Yeah, and it's hard to get offense going when you're getting the ball out of the net every time.
Right. Yeah, you're
right. That's it. And when you're having to inbound the ball after somebody scores, it makes it really difficult to score. And the other part is look, this Auburn team has been a better rebounding team than I honestly thought they would be.
Mm-hmm.
But you still look up and you go, there's spurts where the other team is getting two or three offensive rebounds at a time, and it's just a demoralizing thing when that happens. And it tires you out, especially because it makes you have to play defense that much more. So, I mean, it's everything's compounded. Your lack of depth, you know, losing, you know, not having Bashir, you know, and being able to play, I think, was a huge deal for this team. And obviously, if you'd had Oporum, another big, to give you a few minutes, it would have been helpful. But you know, you look and you know, Cade Magwood, you know, you just haven't. So when you look up and you've got to play a lot of defense and you're moving and switching and doing all those things. It impacts you on the offensive end as well, and I think we've seen that.
Oh, there's no question about it. Right now, I mean, they're still, you know, Auburn is still showing as either on the bubble or one of the last four in or just outside. They have a shot, but it looks much more difficult than it did before last night, even though that was a quad one game that the Tigers lost to Oklahoma. They've got two games. They absolutely have to win these next two, and I don't know that guarantees them a spot in the tournament either just by winning against Ole Miss and LSU.
No, I think you get to 8-10. So you win those two and you lose in Tuscaloosa. You're 8-10. Conference tournaments have not been a big deal for teams that are already in the field, but where they become really important is the separation on that first day of bubble teams. And so I think that's where if you're 8-10, if you're Auburn, you're probably in, but if you lose the first day of the SEC tournament, then you're probably out.
And well, that would be, fine. Yeah, you would have lost eight of your last 11 if that happens
that fine,
as well.
I think it's that fine of a line for them, and you put yourself in that situation. The thing is that, look, this team is good enough to win all three of these. We've seen it.
Yeah, you're right.
They've beaten some really good basketball teams this year. The problem for them is you're also capable of losing all three of these games. And so you're right. You have to win the next two. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And so that's the focus now. Get to eight, and then put everything you got into winning in Tuscaloosa, and see what happens.
That's what they absolutely are going to be required to do if they have, you know, if they're going to get in to the NCAA tournament. We've had some people wondering. I think may have come up last week, Jason. You know, people wondering. Well, if Auburn didn't make the NCAA tournament, do they take an NIT bid? What do you think?
You know, somebody had a thread about that today. A lot of people that immediately said no. I'm not one of those people. If I had a bunch of seniors on the team, and they do have some, but listen, if I have the intentions of keeping Sway and Elijah Freeman, Jovich, you know, that group of players, Kevin Overton, whoever it is,
Elijah
if the
Freeman,
core
yeah,
of my
okay.
team, then having a chance to play postseason basketball and probably being a really high seed and playing games at home, I think can be valuable. Yeah, does it feel like a slap in the face? Yeah, but listen, there's been well over 100 years of Auburn basketball. Being in the postseason, to me, is still something that I don't think you just go, no, we're not doing that. I think basketball and playing games, hey, receiving Pearl, postseason basketball, like all these things are important, I think, for development for your guys, but development for coaches as well. And so I just think I don't see how you turn it down, in my opinion.
Talking with Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. JC, can you stick with us for one more segment as we definitely want to talk some baseball?
Yeah, I can do one more.
All right, sounds good. We'll get to our first break right back here on the Wednesday Drive. Stick with us.
The Drive, and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll-free at 888-382-7502, or email us at TheDrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday, the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Bill and Drew here in the studio. Dan should be joining at some point throughout. We have Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover on The Drive Hotline. One more segment with him as Jason getting ready to do the ball game tonight. He and Brad Law will be on the air. Andy's at a function up in Huntsville, as he was telling us yesterday, with Alex Golish, Cody Burns, and Byron Brown. So Jason will be back on the color, and looking forward to that. And Jason, I know that you probably wished you could have been out there in person the way the baseball team played this past weekend in Arlington.
Yeah, played really well, and you know, again, pitching set the tone.
Yep.
Three strikes. I thought I went out of practice yesterday and kind of got out there, and they had a team meeting, and I was talking to a few folks afterwards, and we were talking about the weekend. I said, I think Jackson Sanders' outing may have been as important of an outing as you could have for him and for a baseball team. And they said, yeah, the Butch had told the team the same thing. I thought the response he had against Florida State and to come back was a huge deal for them to go, okay, hey, well, we're doing work. And so I think that was big. And, you know, listen, you're when you throw strikes and you throw a bunch of them, you're going to have a day where somebody just hits you. That's just the law of average. It's going to happen in baseball. I think the more strikes you throw and the less free bases you give and the less you get behind, the more successful you're going to be on average. And I think that's what they've done a good job of so far.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jackson giving up four runs, five hits in the first inning, then blanking, you know, a top 10 team over the next four innings. That's something that is huge for his confidence and for the team. You're absolutely right to see that, all right, you had a bad inning, shake it off, go back out there and keep doing what we've talked about. And then, of course, Jake was lights out once again. I mean, he has been phenomenal through his first two starts at Auburn.
Yep, just throwing strikes. With multiple pitches for strikes, being able to use both sides of the plate, all those things that Butch Thompson talked about, we've seen from Jake Marciano so far. And so he's done that. Alex Petrovic is just solid, doing the things he does as a three. And then having Drew Whalen and, guys that can come in and pitch. We haven't even
Chatterton,
seen Griffin Graves.
Right.
Haven't even seen Griffin Graves yet. But, you know, Whalen and Chatterton. And then you look at, L.J. Cormier comes in. But, man, having Garrett Brewer and Ryan Hetzler, two closers to play off each other, there's a lot of pitching depth for this team right now. Like you said, we haven't even seen Graves yet. But it's been fun to watch them as they develop. And we'll see, you know, Dre Alvarez tonight. And he's as talented as anybody on this roster. And he's a guy that could come out and throw six shutout innings and have about 10 strikeouts in the blink of an eye. He's that game.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I hadn't seen who the starter was. Dre had a little more on his fastball last week. I know he didn't have – you know, the greatest outing, but I mean, he was able to hold him to just one run, but I don't know that we'd seen 95, 96 out of him like we did last week.
No, I think we've seen a tick up for a few guys. Hetzler is one that's ticked up in his fastball. A few other guys have done that, but yeah, I think, you know, you look at Alvarez and go, look, the ability to throw breaking ball is the key for him, and the off-speed stuff for strikes. If he can do that, then it plays that fastball so much better. So I think that's a thing to watch for him tonight.
The other thing that, a week ago, there were a lot of folks concerned because Auburn was blanked by Cincinnati and had struggled to score in two of three games against Youngstown State. Bats were pretty warm this past weekend. I was reminded yesterday, I mean, the team batting average is over 300, so it's not as though, you know, it's been nothing, but it was good to see some of the hitting last week and some of the youngsters, some of the guys you'd been talking about, Ethan Bingham and Brandon McCrane, guys like that, getting an opportunity and really stepping up and having big series.
Yeah, now you look, those guys are, hey, right now, they're middle-of-the-order guys.
Uh-huh.
Until somebody supplants them, they've shown that they can be good enough to bat in the middle of the order. That's where they are again tonight. And then, yeah, Bristol Carter is the table setter up top. Did a great job of getting on base and scoring runs, which is what he's supposed to do. And so I think you look and go, man, there's a lot of things that that you should be excited about for this team. And look, still got Chris Rembert to come. I think, heck, we could see him maybe a little bit this weekend, and then maybe next week he's back in the lineup for this team. But Ed, you know, Eddie Madrigal is probably only maybe another month away from maybe starting to get a pinch hit appearance or two and see what happens with him. So, look, this team still, he did all that without what going into the fall last year you thought were probably two of your best three offensive players or two of your best four at least. And so now you're building some depth, and if those guys continue to swing it, look, you got, I think Kay Ballou and Todd Clay are two guys, the Auburn guys are going to swing the bat. They're going to find it. But the fact that you've been able to do it without clicking on all cylinders right now is a good sign.
Yeah, and Lucas hadn't really, heated up yet either.
He has not. And so, again, you're thinking about three of your guys that you were counting on to beat. Maybe they were. They were middle-of-the-order guys when this thing started.
Yeah, some of your more experienced guys.
Yeah, they haven't swung it yet. And so when they come around, then it adds just more depth to this lineup.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I mean, there's no question. This is it is really exciting to think about this team and look forward to it. West Georgia coming in tonight. Any surprises in the lineup? You were talking. If you don't mind, tease us a little bit. Hit us with the starting lineup for tonight.
Yeah. Not really any surprises. When you look at kind of where they are right now, it's, I think, Bubman left. Bristol center
and
Caden Wright. Yeah. Bristol at the top of the order, and then Guevara at short, Todd Clay at third, McCrane at second, Bingaman at first, Fraley catching, and then Alvarez to get the start.
All right, who's DHing?
It is Logan Gregorio tonight.
Okay.
So I look at Gregorio to see if he's a guy that had more pop than anybody on the roster in the fall. I think he hit six home runs in the fall for this team, and so. He's a guy that has that power potential. This is an opportunity for him to see what he can do.
Yeah, outstanding. I heard some conversations the other day, and Auburn hadn't been on a home run tear, but I think this team's got pretty good pop up and down the lineup. I was hearing some talk that, you know, this may need to be a team that relies on going first to third and stealing bases and things like that, which they can do. But I think this team's got some pop too.
Yeah, no, I think this team's going to hit home runs. I mean, like. You just haven't started that way yet, and you know, you haven't started like a UCLA where you have two players that already have six home runs each for UCLA. So you don't have that yet. But again, Chase Fraley's got two already. Bingaman's got two. I think Bub's going to have some. Like I mentioned, we mentioned Steele and Clay and Kay Ballou have home run potential as well. And and then River when he comes back is going to be a guy too. So yeah. This team may not have a guy with 20, but I think they could have five or six players with 8 to 10 home runs, you know, in this lineup.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they had five or six guys with double-figure homers. Jason, always appreciate you being able to spend a little bit of time with us. Looking forward to the ball game tonight. Have a great broadcast. But before we let you go, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you and all the folks there at Auburn Undercover are doing.
Yep, like I said, check us out at auburnundercover.com, part of the 24/7 network, and find me on Twitter and all the. We can find us all over social media, but you find me at ITATJ.
All right, Jason, we'll see you at the ballpark.
All right, sounds good. See y'all.
Jason Caldwell joining us here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. We'll open up the phone lines, get to our bottom of the hour break. I'm sure we have some folks that want to comment on last night's disappointment in Norman, Oklahoma. Anything else on your mind sports-wise? Bill here. Dan is on his way and love to hear from you on the Wednesday Drive.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Drew here in the studio. You heard the Game Day Men's Health talking about them. I mean, whatever you're looking for, guys. I mean, from testosterone therapy, ED treatment, vitamin injections, weight loss support. They're great at it there. They're open till 5. 8 to 5 are their hours, so they're open till 5. You can check them online. Give them a call. I don't think I mentioned that in the in the recording. It's 334-209-3706. Our number is 334-321-1390. The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And let's get to it. And Jeff is up first. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Bill. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing all right. I'm excited about baseball.
I'm glad. Well, got to be a dark day on the plains from that game last night.
That was sad. It really was.
Well, I'm sad to say I think the Eagles have checked out of the year, from the coaches to the players. Bill, I love the orange and blue, but I don't think this is going to end well. I really don't, from a coaching perspective.
Yeah,
it's not working.
Well, I just, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's so many factors that go into this when you have so many new players and so many guys that came in. And I know Steven and the staff, you know, had a part in putting this together. It's not all on Bruce by any means. But still, you had so many new pieces coming in there, and they just either haven't bought. It's hard for me to believe they can't grasp what they're supposed to be doing. I mean, I heard Steven talk about low basketball IQ after the game last night, but it's hard to believe they can't understand what they need to be doing, because we've seen it in spurts. At times they'll do it, but it just seems that they just sort of lose where they are, especially defensively, an awful lot. I wonder how many of these players had ever really, you know, Kevin Overton had been known as a good defender. I don't know how many of these other guys ever had been or had been called on to be, and it's something that, you know, defense a lot is want to. It's not just athletic ability. It's you've got to want to be a good defender and want to play good defense, and that just it hasn't been the case. This is I can't recall a team, not Auburn basketball team, that I felt was less sound defensively than this one.
Yes, well, Bill, it's an attitude. Defense's attitude. They had every chance to win that game. They scored enough points last night. I was listening to the call of Andy getting off work last night. You can tell how befuddled he is, and of course, he has to be a professional. I understand. When you can hear the on-air announcer very frustrated, you know it's reached a point where you just can't take it. I couldn't even bring myself home to watch it on DVR last night. I said, there's nothing to watch. Because what fuels your offense is your defense. Every time they would make a run, I would hear next thing, Oklahoma just right down the middle. Layup, 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 three. And no effort. I don't know what I said this. I don't know what's going on with the bench. This kid Magwood, I don't care. I've heard this thing. He can't play D. Well, the kids out there not playing D. Our point guard, I don't know where he was last night. I think it's just a total team dysfunction right now, from the top to the bottom.
Yeah, that may have been Tahad's worst offensive game at Auburn. I mean, yes. I believe he accounted for like 11 points in the entire game. I mean, he hit his first shot, Jeff. He hit a three 42 seconds into the game with 19:18 to go in the first half. He hit the three to tie the game at three. They hit a three. Tahad hit a three. They got a free throw. Auburn hit a two, and that was their only lead. They led for 15 seconds, but Tahad did not get another bucket for the rest of the ball game and just finished with 4 points. Only had a couple of assists and two turnovers. It was as befuddling. It's like Jason was saying a little while ago. I mean, he's shooting less than 28% from three, and nobody expected that.
Why was he still in the game? I don't understand. That's where a coaching perspective. There's no way I wouldn't have gone to that kid, and I have no interest other than Magwood, an Auburn Tiger. at some point, when are you going to trust the kid? Either you're going to trust him or not. He can't be no worse than what you're putting out there now. This coaching, wow, it's just frustrating. Oh, it's beyond frustrating.
You're right. It's beyond. I mean, and you know, it's not. Look, Auburn has played the toughest schedule that anybody has played. This is the toughest schedule in the country this year.
Right.
But you know, 7 games ago, when Auburn was 14-7,
yes.
You're thinking this is still a pretty good. This is still a pretty good first year. And look, granted, they played some very difficult opponents, but that loss at Mississippi State and then the loss last night where, you know, once they got behind, they just kept falling a little farther and a little farther and a little farther behind. They never really it never really felt like they were going to be able to make that run and try to get close. And look, Oklahoma's a team that all year long has had big leads and has seen them go away.
Yes.
And that didn't happen last night. So, yes, you're right. That is very, very disappointing.
Well, from a defensive perspective, that's where we're losing these games. There's no interest.
Oh, no doubt.
I don't know what the coaches over there are doing. I know they're not the head coaches. But somebody has to somebody has to be held accountable for this. You know, we can no longer use, and then I'll let you go. We can no longer use that this is a new group.
No.
Duke has a turnover program every year. They continue to win. It's the system that players have to buy into. And if they're not, then they shouldn't be a part of your program. I'll leave it at that.
Great stuff, Jeff. Hard to argue with anything that you said. I mean, and Stephen Pearl, I mean, that's one of the things I definitely wanted to hear the post game last night. And, you know, he came out and said he wanted to apologize to Auburn fans for the poor performance. He said, and I quote, "We were entitled tonight. We were selfish tonight on the defensive end. We had no urgency, and that's unacceptable." And then he went on to say, "I've got to change up how I'm coaching these guys. I've got to ratchet up my intensity a little bit more, and maybe they'll start to play like I act." I have never felt like Stephen Pearl has taken it that easy and not had intensity with these guys. I mean, I know he is beyond frustrated, but I don't know. I have no idea what you do now. I mean, it appears. Jeff was talking about Caden Magwood, and, you know, it doesn't appear, you know, I'll be surprised if we see Caden Magwood again. I mean, it's been so long since we have seen him. Remember, he got a few starts there, but it, you know, Stephen was pretty adamant a week or two ago when he was asked about the rotation and said, "These are the guys," pretty much said, "These are the guys that he's going to go with." I don't know if you're going to see anything else. Jason was talking about, you know, making some changes. I don't know how many changes you can make when you're only playing seven guys, when you're only playing seven players. Maybe you sit somebody who has been starting. Does that mean, you know, the only player who hasn't been getting about 20 minutes out of the bunch is Filip Jovic. And I don't know. I mean, I really like him and the potential that he has for the future, but I don't know that he's ready to be out there playing 25 plus minutes a game. But I don't know. I don't know what you do. I mean, but Stephen Pearl is he said something that we've already said Saturday, the Ole Miss game Saturday night, and then the LSU game next week. Those two games at home, they are absolute must win games. You don't win Saturday night, I think you're out of the NCAA tournament unless you win the SEC tournament. I don't think winning a couple of ball games or I don't even know that maybe getting to the finals of the SEC tournament, maybe that would get you in. But you lose a ball game like this one Saturday, that's your 14th loss, and you've still got Alabama. I mean, you've got a chance. If you lose, just think about that. You got a chance of being 16-15. If you lose one of those, one of your next two ball games here at home, 16-15 going into the SEC tournament. Now we've talked about. Look, there have been a lot of coaches, a lot of very successful coaches, who have had you know, tough first years, and Stephen Pearl by no means would be the first one to have that happen. And again, it's with a team that was basically brand new, and the one returnee that you had has struggled so much more than anybody ever would have expected. I mean, I fully thought, and I think everyone felt coming into this year, Tahad Pettiford's probably going to be a 20-point a game guy. He's gonna, you know, he's the guy that you're sort of, you're building the team. He's the face of the team. You're building around him. You went out and you brought in Keyshawn Hall, who was the leading scorer in the Big 12. And those are going to be your two studs, and you're going to build around them. Now, they are your top two scorers. And Tahad's still averaging, I guess, around 14 a game. But it has been such an inconsistent year. And he just hadn't been able to hit his shots. Like Jason said, those were some startling numbers. The fact that in 28 games, Tahad's hit 50 threes. I would have thought that as we approach the end of the season, he'd have been averaging at least four or five threes a game. And that would be, you know, in the 100 range. It'd be about double what he's made now. Now, I wouldn't expect him to be making double the percentage, but he at least has, you know, and this can be, at times, this can be a concern, but, I mean, no. When you're not making shots, you realize you're not making shots, and you don't continue taking them at that pace. That's sort of been what we've seen with Tahad. I know that earlier on this year, it was like, he's got to keep shooting them because we know we're going to know that he's going to make them. But when you're 28 games into the season, I think as quite a few folks have pointed out, and Jason among them, you are what you are. This is a team that is not an exceptional three-point shooting team. And they are a poor defensive team. They're poor. They're really bad defending the three, and they're not a whole lot better inside. Even though Auburn's been a good rebounding team, their percentages and the opponent's percentages, especially coming down the stretch around the basket, are alarming. Auburn has missed just a ton of shots around the basket. And other teams are making a pretty high percentage in that same area. So those things don't bode well. Now, again, you've got two of the bottom teams in the SEC coming up here the next two ball games. Has Ole Miss won since Auburn beat them? I don't know that they have. They're on a 9-game losing streak. That's almost scary to think about. They're on a 9-game losing streak, and you wonder where Auburn's heads are, where the mindset is with them coming in on Saturday night. But yeah, Ole Miss is another. What are they? 3-12 in the SEC, or 3-11? 3-11 because they're playing tonight. They're 3-11 with a 9-game losing streak coming in, and then LSU's 2-12. That's who Auburn's got, and they've got to beat them. I mean, it won't help them if they beat them, but it would damage them tremendously and most likely knock them out of the postseason, like I said, unless they win the SEC tournament. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Dan should be joining us at some point. Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser is going to be in for hour number two as well. So we'd love for you to join in. 334-321-1390 here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron. With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Drew here in the studio. Dan's on his way back from Troy. As the Troy women's basketball team got back into Troy earlier this afternoon, so he said he'd be in. Then he'll turn right back around as the regular season is wrapping up. You know, you've got conference tournaments going on all across the country starting next week in women's basketball. So he'll be at some point leaving to head down to Pensacola. Yeah, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser going to be with us an hour number two, getting here a little bit early. Like I said, hopefully Dan will be in a little while. I was thinking maybe if Dan got in, I might sneak out just a little early to head over to the ballpark. Looking like it might rain, though. I hope not. It's been sort of overcast and looking like rain here for the last few hours. Auburn's got West Georgia coming in tonight before they host Nebraska this weekend. 6 o'clock tonight and Friday night, and then 2 o'clock on Saturday, 1 o'clock on Sunday for the Nebraska series this weekend, as the Tigers coming off very impressive performance out in Arlington this past weekend, knocking off Kansas State, Florida State, and Louisville, as we were talking about that with Jason just a little while ago. And again, the pitching thus far has been phenomenal. So I'm looking forward to getting over to the ballpark and watching Dre Alvarez tonight, who had a little more juice on the fastball last week than I recall from a year ago. Adam Cole is sitting down here. Yeah, I was a little surprised to see 96 last week from Dre.
Yeah, and Mark Etheridge from D1 Baseball was upstairs with us in the press box, and he's got access to the analytics, and he said that I think Dre topped out at, 97.
Wow, I didn't see the 97.
I did not realize that he had added that much velo in the offseason, because if I remember right, he topped out maybe like mid-90s at best, like 94, 95.
Yeah, he was more, usually 93, and I'd feel like he muscled up to 94 a little last year.
It was that kind of thing.
But he's not a guy that relied on just blowing it by you, though.
Right. Like, that was not him at all, him or Christian Chatterton. But, I mean, you see it. I felt like I at least have seen it from both of them just on the mound. Like, clearly a year, a full offseason has done a lot as far as just adding weight, and I'm sure adding to that velocity. So I'll be interested to see what happens. I'm bummed I can't make it over there tonight. But, West Georgia and not Cincinnati, I'll be curious to see just like what the midweek difference is tonight. But no, should be a good opportunity to just kind of keep stacking for him, for sure, whether that's Dre or that entire lineup. So.
Well, the thing folks need to do, if you're not a college baseball aficionado or big fan, you may not realize it's like a lot of these midweek games, it's very difficult because in many cases, you're going to go up against the best guy that some of them have. It's not their conference play yet, so they want to see how good their guys are, and they're going to put them out there. In the meantime, Butch and Teef, they're trying to figure out exactly, how their staff is going to shake out. They've got an idea who the weekend guys are right now, and this is the time to look at some of the other fellas.
Right. It's kind of it's really big once you get to kind of looking at the postseason. It's really big for a lot of those visiting or smaller school teams as far as their resume, if they can steal one. But
sure,
it's kind of the inverse for the other squads. And I think yesterday it was Oklahoma got upset.
Arkansas.
Arkansas, yeah, they were one of them. And then UCLA and Georgia Tech, all four of them got beat up by a mid-major, and it's one of those things where it's midweek madness, I guess, as they call it. But no, you're right. Like, that's very much kind of the dichotomy of it, and going up against what is West Georgia, they're Division I now, right?
I believe so.
But even still, I mean, going up against that stature of program, you should hopefully be able to avoid any sort of shocking upset. But no, yeah, that's very much the case. It's just you're tinkering and you're trying to find your guys, and like you said, I mean, they're throwing their best at you as hard as they can. So,
yeah, because a week ago, I mean, there were people just thinking, oh, this team's not going to hit. We're in all kinds of trouble after you get blanked by Cincinnati.
Right, and I think Cincinnati too is. Butch talked about it a little bit post game. I mean, they certainly have their own style of play. I think kind of. It kind of reminds me of really like Southeast Louisiana when they came in for that regional in 22. They were kind of that style, and they went a long way. And I think Cincinnati, of course, high major, but they're kind of the same sort of team. So should be a little bit different tonight.
A little preview there of Adam Cole, who's with us in hour number two. Adam, of course, from the Montgomery Advertiser. We're halfway done. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell joining me for the first couple of segments here. And we'll see if Dan wanders in as well. Hope you will. You can join us by giving us a call on the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390. We're right back with hour number two of the Wednesday Drive.
Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this. It is hump day at the ballpark, by the way. The Campbell's going to be over there. It is $2.50 hot dogs and $5.16 domestic brews. So I mean, you got it going on at the baseball park, and those are
not for the Camel. All right, just to be clear.
The
beers
and
the hot dogs.
They usually tell you don't feed the Camel. I'd say don't give Joe. He's not Joe.
Loretta.
It's Joe.
Loretta.
It's Joe.
This one's not. It's Loretta. That's why I was going to say don't. Or Joe. Either one.
It's been the same Camel now for 3 years, I believe.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
Could you tell? I don't know. I mean, I haven't been up that close to be able to tell personally if it's the same one.
Yeah,
they could pull a switch on me, and
might not know. I'd be in the same boat. Allegedly, it's the same Camel.
Adam marked it with a marker last year, so we're going to see if it's. Yeah, it's
like who's that over here?
Oh, hey guys,
Dan is back in the studio for an hour before he grabs a change of clothes and heads down to South Alabama.
We're going to do 10 hours of radio on the drive this week. And I will be here for
this one.
One of the 10. I missed the first 2 days this week, and I got a bus to Mobile tomorrow.
You're
for
coming
the,
in right at the midpoint. I mean, halfway through the middle day of the week.
And I'm coming back after the Trojans picked up a win in Jonesboro last night. Arkansas State beat Troy three times last year, including in Pensacola. Won the tournament to go to the NCAAs. They were undefeated at home this year, undefeated at home last year. They had not lost a home conference game since March of 2024. And Troy goes in there, and Ark State would have been tied with Troy in the standings if they'd won last night.
Won.
And the Trojans take care of business. Ark State scored the first basket. Troy went on a 12-0 run, led the rest of the game. Ark State's one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country, only hit four. Last night from distance, so Troy did a really good job keeping them bottled up. It all started with defense. I know that's something.
Yeah, I was going to say, does Steven need to talk to Shandrin?
You're hearing a lot of that these days, but it's starting with getting guys to getting players to buy in on the defensive end and seeing what happens from there. But yeah, really impressive stuff. Troy can they can guarantee themselves a share of the conference title with a win Friday night in Mobile. There's a chance they win a share of the conference title tonight. Georgia Southern and App State play at 5:30. If App beats Georgia Southern, the Trojans will clinch a share of the Sun Belt title for the third time in program history.
So, congratulations there,
Thanks,
Dan.
Guys.
Wasn't nearly as enjoyable for Auburn basketball last night in Norman, Oklahoma, as once again to open the ball game, an open three. And a couple more open threes, then it didn't matter. The basket, as Steven described it a week or so ago, looking like a hula hoop to Josh Hubbard. Must have looked like that for last night for Oklahoma, because a new low for Auburn basketball, allowing 13 of 19, and it was 10 of 14. Was it 10 of 14 at the half? I believe it was 10 of 14 at the half.
I think that's right.
For Oklahoma on their way to a... just a comfortable cruising 91-79 win.
And as we've been saying for a couple of games, I mean, look, there are warning signs everywhere. You know, one that occurred to me last night is I don't think this team, and I know, like, it's you got the recency bias of just last night's game, but it's like, of late, has this team been playing better basketball than they played at the beginning of conference play? Like, has this team gotten better over the course of the year?
It's hard to say yes. They had that ridiculously tough stretch there, but no, I mean, when you look at Mississippi State and then Oklahoma last night.
Compared to even losses to Georgia and A&M. Mm-hmm. I think you got the sense that the team was playing better basketball at the beginning of January than they are right now, which is especially bad for a team that's made up of so many new pieces. Mm-hmm. Like, you'd think they'd gel and come together, and that hasn't been the case.
Right.
And as for Oklahoma's offense, like, we've been saying, it's not the three-point percentage. It's not about the ones that go in. How many of them are open at the three? Like, how often do teams have open looks at three-point line? Because, I mean, there have been games where Alabama, Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are games where it's like you're appalled by the number of open looks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they left some on the table and still had a huge night from the outside. And it seems to start with they can't keep the ball out of the paint. Right, like the ball gets inside, and then the defense collapses on it, and then it goes back outside for
kick it to the corner. It seems like, and it's always open,
either for an open shooter or one extra pass. Mm-hmm. And it's like I don't think you're going to fix that 30 games into the season.
Yeah,
you know, but I mean, it's never too late to show some urgency and try to get it going. But no, they've got defensive problems, and it seems to start with an inability. Like you see those when you see a team playing great defense, and the ball stays on the perimeter for 25 seconds, right? Because the team does, like, they don't have a way to get it in. They can't get it in off the dribble. They can't throw it. It's like teams get it into the paint immediately.
Way too easily. Way too easily.
And
yes,
it's like, and that's been all season. And that's not something, and that's your perimeter defense from everywhere. And yeah, I'm going to point, I would say Steven is at the point now where it's like, if someone's not providing satisfactory perimeter defense, it doesn't matter what they give you offensively.
Mm-hmm.
Like it does not matter what they give you offensively if they're a minus defensively. And last night, some of the guys that were minuses defensively weren't really helping you offensively either.
No, I mean, it was Kevin Overton pretty much as the only offense for Auburn until midway through the second half when Auburn was down 15. Then Keyshawn Hall scored. I mean, Auburn had two guys in double figures, but I mean, it was one. I mean, for the longest time, Kevin Overton had 20, and nobody else had more than six or seven.
Yeah,
as it was, you know, well into the second half.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll see what happens. You know, they I mean, I would think that if Auburn wins the two games against the non-tournament teams and then loses to Alabama, because the bubble's so weak, I still think they'd probably be in the field even if it's a play-in game. I know Lenardi right now has Auburn as the last team in. Was his update from this morning?
Right,
last team in. The byes. You did not have Auburn
last,
in the play.
Last of the byes, yeah. Right, without being played.
Last of the byes. So so Auburn could very easily play their way into the first four, you know, between now
and... Let me tell you what, a loss, though, to either one of these teams, to Ole Miss or LSU, you're gonna have to maybe at least get to the conference championship game, tournament championship game, or win it to get in to make sure you're in.
The problem is the bubble seems so flawed, right? Like like the teams that aren't in the – I think USC right now, we were just talking about Chad Baker-Mazzara during the commercial break and how he's missed in different ways on this team. But, like, I think USC is one of the top teams not in the field right now. And I think even with a loss – in one of these two games, you still look at Auburn's total body of work, especially since the committee says they don't care about recency. It's not about how you finished your last 10, how you do in February. It's supposed to be total body of work, and that's been the stated, committee. That's been the company line for a while. If that's the case.
If that's the case, Dan, you're telling me that you could possibly, if you lost to either LSU or Ole Miss and lost in the first round of the SEC tournament, you're 16-16. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any way you're in an NCAA tournament as an at-large 500 overall team.
The thought that a 500 team, even number one in strength of schedule, the thought that a 500, like a 16-16 team getting in would be... You would, like the people that are angry about the SEC being shown favor... In different sports, would have a field day with the idea of a 16-16 SEC team making the NCAA tournament, even one that played, I think at that point it would probably be talking about 19 games against the field. Mm-hmm. 19 of your games would be against teams that are going to be in the NCAA tournament, Alabama and whoever you play in the SEC tournament, presumably. Like, even then, I still think, you'd have people that are furious about it. I would say, finish above 500 to feel good about your.
No, I think it's as simple as if Auburn loses either of those games, in particular the Ole Miss game, just with the way that would sit in the resume. Like, I don't see that team making the tournament unless, you know, like Bill said. I mean, if you make a miraculous run, like it would have to be more than a couple wins, I think, in Nashville.
No, I think you'd need to be playing on Sunday.
Right. Like, if you lose either of those, the thing that had strengthened Auburn's resume up to this point was that they hadn't really had many, if any, like bad losses from a resume standpoint. Of course, those blowouts, but then you lose the game at Mississippi State, and I think that was technically a quad two loss. But between that and even though Oklahoma is a quad one loss, like it is not, you know, I know they talk about what quad one A, like I think that's a thing. And
that wins was, above bubble, right? That's, yeah, the new, that's the new stat.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around wins above bubble, admittedly. Like I'm still working on that.
This is like Bill James got, you know, got into the bat. Like we got war and we got, you know, we got all kinds of,
right.
You know, yeah.
But Vorp. I did you say Gorp?
Vorp, right?
Vorp. Vorp. Okay. Vorp. I don't even know Vorp, but that's the thing about this resume is it's like you had avoided the stinger sort of losses, like the games that you should have won. You won all of those up until Mississippi State. And now you're at the point where, yeah, all it's going to take to me is at least one that, you know, you're going to need something absolutely miraculous, excuse me. But yeah, I think Ole Miss, LSU, if either of those are a loss, I just don't see how this team makes the field.
You'd also be talking, I mean, are both those games at home?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at the extra damage of a home loss to
a quad three home loss, that'd be a quad Ole Miss. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, Ole Miss quad three, LSU's two, right?
LSU is quad two. Yeah.
They would both be in the running for your worst loss of the season, right? I don't know where they are.
Ole Miss, it is your worst loss of the season.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm thinking, but both of them compared to State.
Yeah.
And State was and State was on the road.
State and A&M was the other quad two loss.
Yeah. And A&M's. I mean, I think A&M's in the tournament picture compared to these other teams.
Oh, yeah.
For now.
They've scuffled closer to the bubble. I think they're kind of where Auburn was maybe sitting pre-Mississippi State right now of like they, you know, they can't screw it up. But no, yeah, like that Ole Miss far and away, that would be your worst loss if you drop that one.
I mean, so it is a I mean, calling it a setback, I think, is putting it lightly. Especially after the thought that maybe they found something against Kentucky, right?
Yeah, you were just hoping that was going to be the spark. That was going to be something. All right, they finally got that losing streak behind them, and this is going to be the game that's going to go ahead and spur them. And you thought you'd really. I mean, I think a lot of people felt you're going to see a team that's just going to come out intense and really, you know, just on fire last night, and that was anything but the case.
Instead, you're seeing why teams that are solidly in the NCAA tournament that have lost to Auburn, like Florida and Arkansas and Kentucky, like they look at it as a missed opportunity, right? The thought that even Texas, like the thought that they lost to Auburn is, you know, it's not acknowledgement of what Auburn can do. It's the thought that maybe those teams stumbled or dropped the ball in a game that, looking back, they probably should have won.
And you look at, I think it was Arkansas and Florida both. I don't know if Florida, when was Florida's last loss? Was it Auburn?
Probably.
Probably. By that measure, like I think Arkansas's only lost what? They lost that Kentucky game.
The Alabama game.
And the Alabama
double
game.
Overtime.
But I mean they had a run there where it was like I don't think it was an 8-game win streak, but it was like 8 wins in a span of 10 or 9 or something like that. Like
Florida has not lost since the Auburn game.
Exactly. I mean, like those teams got up off the mat and bounced back, and that was up until that long losing streak for Auburn. They hadn't lost, I think, more than 2 games in a row all year up to that point, and it's just, you know, I'm sure part of that is maybe to a degree of the level of competition you're going up against and the lack of depth, and I'm sure there's a level of, you know, long season, so to speak, which is very, you know, quite the platitude. But at the same time, I mean, everybody's right there.
Until Saturday, Texas hadn't lost since the Auburn game.
Yeah, that's right. They're Texas, on a 5-game winning streak.
Texas had been undefeated since Auburn until they played Georgia on Saturday. Texas hosts Florida tonight, by the way.
Okay.
That game's at 6 on ESPN or on ESPN2. But like that.
So it's beneficial for teams to lose to Auburn.
Like good luck, Chuck. Right? Like, you know, you lose to us, and then you figure out what's happening. You figure out what to do afterward, but no, I wonder how much of it's personnel and how much of it's scheme. The fact that you've seen the scheme work with other personnel, you know, sort of makes you think that, especially defensively, it does. But that does that excuse a lack of adjustments? Because I know people have wondered, like, you know, when does the plan, if that's not working immediately, when does the plan change?
Does it take you to halftime to realize it? And I don't know, I was going to ask both you guys your thoughts on Steven's postgame last night. Does Steven Pearl, has he ever come across as not being intense? I mean, talking about ratcheting up the intensity. Well, at times he tries. It looks like he's trying to stay as calm as he can.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I think that's a fair way to put it. I mean, you see it in the huddle. Like he looks intense in the huddle, and I don't think like he lacks in intensity. But he talked a lot last night about, you know, I mean, very much with the caveat up front of like, I'm going to do everything I can to scheme and adjust and get these guys in the right place, but needing more from his guys. And I think the phrase was, we can't keep making low basketball IQ mistakes. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's not that I don't think he's intense or can be intense or has been lacking in that to any degree, but like, I would think it's fair to say I'm not, you know, the biggest basketball savant in the world, but it does look a lot like it's mental for this team.
Like, I agree in so many regards.
I mean, you know, that's up to the defensive mistakes and not being able to, you know, you make a mistake on one possession, don't do it again on the next, something as simple as that. And even, you know, some of these younger guys, whether that's different points in the season or up till now, I think a positive is you used to see with Elijah Freeman that it looked like he was thinking a lot more, especially on the offensive end. You've seen a lot less of that lately, but it's just so much of this just it feels mental. Just from everything you see. And I think, you know, I'm sure that the lack of familiarity with each other, the lack of overall, you know, high major Division I experience, I'm sure that compounds it. But like, I don't think Stephen Pearl is somebody who lacks for intensity. But at this point, you know, you haven't been able to find the fix. Like, you got to try something, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And
no
if that's it.
And I still, I mean, you can wonder about intensity. I still think that when you're trying this with seven, and even saying it's seven, I mean, you've got a couple guys that basically never leave the floor.
Mm-hmm. It's 6.5. I mean, last night, Phillip played more minutes last night than he's played in a long time. And he's still, I mean, you know, he's not getting 20 minutes a game.
And that's the second time that's happened in conference play, and it's both foul trouble, mm-hmm. right? Because against South Carolina, the foul trouble put him in mm-hmm. more, and he played well. Last night it was foul trouble with Kia with Murph,
right?
But no, I mean, this is, I just wonder if the die is cast. Like, I mean, look, maybe you can break through between now and the end of the year. It just feels to me like it would take, and I don't know if there's a, I mean, there doesn't appear to be a personnel move to make, right? It's not like there's a guy you can switch. Like, there's not an option on the bench that you can try instead.
Yeah, Jeff called in right at the top of the show and said, why don't we see Kevin? Why don't we see Caden Magwood? And I said, I can't imagine seeing Caden Magwood now.
Yeah,
I mean, because it's been so long since he's played.
It's been so long that the defense was never really there when you saw it, and I think that ship has kind of sailed, at least for this season. I don't know. There's always the off season and next year, but. Yeah, I just, you're right. I don't know that there's really a guy that you look at,
you reach down on the bench and go, okay, let's try this guy now.
I wonder if if you want to talk about next season a little bit, and there's no telling who can come back and who can't, but like if you're filling out this roster for next year mm-hmm. and you're looking to bring in eight or nine guys that you're looking to have eight or nine guys that you can sort of earmark.
Yeah, you want to have, say, a nine-man. Yeah. You'd love a nine-man rotation.
I don't know how you can look at Simon or Magwood or Bashir mm-hmm. as one of those eight or nine based on what they gave you this year. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, and I know, look, and with Bashir, there's injury.
Yeah.
But, you know, so you want to, I mean, and maybe you can let him play his way into it. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not saying, like, run anybody off. But, I mean, he's got a lot of work to do,
yeah.
which is a little disappointing when you think about how many of these guys are slated to return. It still feels like you need to go out and sign a bunch of players to make this thing work next year, depending on who's back and who isn't.
And, you know, and really you think
But even back, if everybody's back, you still probably have work to do as far as going out and signing pieces.
But think back on it. Back in the summer, didn't you sort of feel as Bashir was one of your top new guys? I mean, there was Keyshawn
right.
Hall.
Right.
And I think people were more excited about Abdul Bashir than they were Keyshawn Murphy.
Yeah.
Even though that may not be.
Murph and Overton both had D1 experience.
They did, but I think the excitement about the leading scorer coming in from junior college.
Right. I think that was.
And a three-point gunner.
Right. I think there was a lot of excitement there, and it was just sort of the, you know, it was like when they got Elijah Freeman, and it was, you could apply the same thinking to Abdul Bashir of it's like, okay, you're making a jump, you know, is that going to translate? And, you know, like it was, you know, to be determined, of course, and obviously the injuries have hampered it. But no, I think from what you saw from him in short time, you know, you didn't see a lot on the defensive end, which is a lot of what you're going to need to find in this offseason. And, you know, I think of those three, like, I'd say it probably goes what it was Simon, Magwood, Bashir. I think if you're talking about who to bring back, I'm not sure who's 1A or 1B, but it's Mag or excuse me, not Magwood, it's Bashir and Simon, and then, you know, whatever
so
remains to be seen with Magwood,
because right.
you know they're still young. Like that's kind of the thing, is you've got a lot of pieces who have flashed, albeit maybe a little briefly this year, but you've got a lot of young pieces that you can develop, you know, and like even Emeka Opuram, you know, like I'm fascinated to see where his career goes, because that's a guy who I think if you can build him up, like.
But can you go into next year thinking
expecting
any of those guys as part of the rotation? I mean, that's the thing that's kind of scary, is because what if you miss, if you're wrong,
you're back to, you know, hoping you've got seven guys that can play.
You've got to go out guns blazing to reestablish your front court. Like you have to go out there and get a true five man. That was just the bedrock of your success for the last, 4 years between Walker and Jani? Mm-hmm. And now, like, you've had none of that, and it's just, I know it doesn't get talked about much anymore with this team, because obviously we're in the thick of it, but I think that just sent a ripple. You know, you don't have that premier rim protector down there, and that's not to say you go out and find, you know, Jani Broom or Walker Kessler, but to go out and find somebody.
They've done that before.
Right, and they have, and it'd be great if they do, but like just getting dependability in that regard doesn't have to be an All-American.
No, you know what? If you had been able to have a Dylan Cardwell this year and let Keyshawn Murphy be your four,
yeah.
Wow. Mm. I mean, how much different that would have made this team.
Exactly. So, no, I think I'm fascinated for the offseason and to see where this roster goes and what it looks like, because you've got a lot of pieces that you could bring back and invest in. But at the same time, it's kind of like Dan's saying, you know, how much do you weigh that gamble, right, of trying to develop somebody as opposed to, you know, getting a proven piece.
Bill, Dan, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser here in hour number two. We need to get to our first break. Love to hear from you. Give us your thoughts. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser here in the studio, Drew at the controls, as we've been talking about the Auburn loss last night in Norman to Oklahoma and you know, the rest of this season and a little beyond, as a matter of fact, as we got into the during the break, talking a little bit about you know, next year, how to, you know, you don't know who's going to be back, so you don't really know how you're going to restructure, how you're going to you know, build for next year. The only thing you know is the Keyshawns won't be back next year. They're out of eligibility. I know you have a lot of people that are still trying to find ways of getting extra ability. I don't see any way that either of those guys are back.
I think we live in a world right now where you can talk about seniors as though they're playing their last year of college basketball, and if the rules change, you can reevaluate that. But for now, pretty much.
Even if the rules don't change sometimes.
The rules don't change. But it would seem like, you're looking at a bunch of guys who could come back, and I think look, I don't think the best thing for Stephen Pearl would be to reshuffle the deck and go brand new players and not bring back anyone, because I think that's part of the problem this year. But identifying who can be counted on as a contributor, where they need to go where they need to go make moves in the portal, and then having those bets pay off, right? Hitting on the right guys. That's going to be a huge challenge for Steven, because it would seem like whether this team is in the NCAA tournament, you know, on the right side of the bubble, or they just miss out, or they collapse down the stretch, like regardless of which outcome we have here, there's going to be pressure on next year's team to be better than this year's team. I think that's fair.
I don't think there's any way that the expectations won't be that there's a step forward.
After this up and down season, with I think more downs than people were expecting, even considering everything. Like,
I think a lot of people didn't consider everything. A lot of people just thought it's going to continue because you've got you know, you have Bruce's players and you got the whole staff back.
And it was a team. I mean, it's not just, and that just wasn't just an Auburn.
That wasn't realistic.
But it wasn't just the way Auburn people were thinking. I mean, this team was picked in the top half of the SEC by the media in the preseason. This team was a preseason top 25 team. Like, right. There was optimism around the country that this Auburn thing, maybe you weren't a Final Four pick in the preseason, but there was the thought that this was going to be, you know, one of the 25 or 30 best teams in the country.
Well, Dan, I mean, 7 games ago, weren't you still sort of feeling that way when this team was 14-7?
Yeah.
With the schedule they had played, you felt like, oh, they'd come out of the next four ball games 2-2. If they do that, man, this team's set to be a pretty high seed in the NCAA tournament.
In late January, I mean, we looked and said, you know, if Auburn had beaten A&M on that buzzer beater, they'd be in first place right now. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a time 8 wow. games ago where Auburn was, yeah. I think, you know, that's where you were in the standing. I think right after Florida,
yeah.
you looked and you said, exactly, you know, if Auburn had beaten A&M, you know, they'd be tied with A&M in first place. And it's like, you know, those days are long gone. Yeah, now
yes,
you're
indeed.
You know, now you're trying to hope for 7 or 8 SEC wins to avoid.
You better get to 8.
Critical mass. Yeah.
If you don't get to 8 conference wins, then it will be pretty much a collapse. You will have lost 8 of your last 10.
Yeah. No, it's I don't know. It's kind of baffling to watch it all unfold, because it was like a couple, I guess, was that, I'm trying to remember if that was pre or post Mississippi State loss, but I wrote a little bit about the first Janai team, you know, and just kind of the, at least from a resume standpoint, the familiarity of it, and obviously things have shifted now to where I think they look a little different, but like that team, as much as it came close and never quite like got to where it could have at its best, like this one is just, I lose words sometimes trying to think of how to put it.
I think the other problem with that comparison, because we've mentioned that on the Observer podcast a couple of times, you know, the similarities between like when you were starting over after the Jabari and Walker Kessler season, you know, you're starting over with a bunch of new players. The thinking there was that a lot of the best players on that Janai team weren't seniors.
No, coming back, and you were only going to get better because, you know, you felt confident that you were going to have those guys.
And Steven does not have the luxury right now of thinking about that when it comes to playing time, because I think he needs to win games right now. He can't be worried about, well, Murph and Hall aren't seniors, or Murph and Hall are seniors, so I better play everybody else and start getting ready for next year. But it also, like, it, you know, if a lot of your production is senior production, like it's work to be done to figure out what, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, and when the production you get from those seniors resembles what you got last night, right, where Murph's in foul trouble really early and plays the handful of minutes.
Yeah, Keyshawn scores 26, but
empty calories.
Only had 7 while the game was ever even, you know, in doubt.
Yeah, until what, Oklahoma's up 18
in
you know, with 10 minutes to go, something like that, and Keyshawn Hall had been largely a non-factor to that point in the game. So, yeah, it's and I know Steven said that Keyshawn Hall can't have that many turnovers and can't. You know, it's you know.
No, I mean, he can't affect you more negatively, like the you know, last night with his continued defensive problems and the 6 turnovers. That's, you know, as much as he has the ball in his hands, like Stephen was saying last night, that can't happen offensively.
And the ball can't stop when it gets to him either, because it throws off the rhythm of everybody else. I think Fishback made you know, reference to that on the broadcast last night. The idea that when you're running the half court offense and there's a place where the ball sticks and doesn't come out, or it takes a while for the ball to come out from that piece, it messes with everybody else, and it's led to some really unsightly half court offensive possessions, because you're sort of wondering, I mean you can understand that the guys aren't on the same page. There's miscommunication, there's a disconnect, I think there's still the same offensive firepower. They're still the same team
You still have you know, a half dozen guys that can score 20.
But you wonder if the book's out in some way. And I think I think it is. Teams feel very safe about how to attack, and teams feel pretty safe about how to defend.
Did you guys see what Porter Moser said after the game last night?
No, I didn't.
He was talking about 2-point field goals, and I believe it was when Auburn gets more than 22-point attempts. It's something of that nature. I'm probably misparaphrasing, but they held him underneath the number. And that, I mean, I felt like you started seeing that, especially in the Vanderbilt game, of you were trying to drive, you were trying to get there, and there were just so many bodies packed in.
Yeah.
And part of it was it looked like guys were going in trying to get a foul call and not trying to finish. And I think some of that's changed a little bit, but that whole aspect of your offense, I think the book has been out on that for a long time. And, you know, this got talked about a lot earlier in the season, but I do think it still remains true that the success of Auburn's offense really does impact its defense. And when they're not able to even get that, you know, I mean, the 3-point shooting has been streaky as ever, but like when you're not able to drive and either finish through contact and get the points or get a foul call to boot, like you see it, you know. Again, to go back to that mental piece of it, you see it. I feel like the offense affects the defense on this team. That's been so true that we've talked about it so much, but I do think the book is out on this offense, and I think teams are packing the paint and know that Auburn's just trying to get to the line ad nauseum.
The stat Adam just referenced, when Auburn has fewer than 23 two-pointers this year, they've only won twice.
And Auburn has just been atrocious. I mean, I asked Stephen about it a couple of weeks ago. I mean, it's the percentage around the rim has just been awful.
Auburn was,
you know, down the stretch.
17 of 34 from two last night.
And that's better than they've been
against Oklahoma.
For a couple of games.
They were 10 of 15 at the rim, but only 15 shots at the rim because you're settling for tougher shots because Oklahoma. And it is, it resembles.
You know, Wagee was.
That was the best player on the floor last night.
That was the other piece, and I know he finished with 18-9, but he was right up on that rebound total at the end of the first half.
Yeah.
And like that was, you know, Nigel Pack did what everybody else has seemingly done in terms of guard play against Auburn, but like I think what Waggy did last night, like that was, I'm not sure if that might have been the biggest atrocity.
That's one of the better games a big has had against Auburn this year, and. You know, it's the strategy Auburn used successfully against Florida, right? Like Auburn packed the paint and said, hit jumpers. And if you want to try to force it inside, we'll make life miserable for your bigs. And it worked. It worked to perfection. I think Florida, you know, Florida struggled from the, you know, with jumpers in that game and who was shooting them. They've readjusted since then, which is part of the reason why they haven't lost since that Auburn game. But yeah, you wonder what Auburn's plan B is when teams put a lot of bodies in the paint, because I mean, I guess you have to try to you have to shoot over it, but teams feel pretty comfortable daring Auburn to win that way, and an Auburn offense that had been one of the better ones in the conference for a lot of the season looks pretty pedestrian when teams can utilize that defense.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. I know we're a little bit behind, but we'll be right back, and we're going to get to the phone lines, and you can get in line, 334-321-1390, here on the Wednesday Drive.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Adam Cole here in the studio. Drew's at the controls. And let's get to the drive hotline. And Philly Fanatic is up. What's up?
Hey, I think the guy Auburn misses the most is Cardwell, because his big body kept the bigs from the other teams from getting putbacks, from getting dunks, and it also kept the guards from the other team driving the lane. And those stats don't translate. There's no stats for keeping people out of the middle, right? Broom had all these incredible stats. Who's playing in the NBA? Cardwell. Who's still in the G League? Broom. Does he fit in at all to the NBA? You know, to me, Auburn needs five. They're going to need five transfer portals, and they're going to need at least two big, wide bodies. I mean, because if they don't, it's going to be the same thing. The other teams are going to be playing dunk ball on them.
Yeah, no, I think that Dylan was probably underappreciated, you know, based on you know, the fact that maybe the numbers weren't eye-popping and that he had there were other guys on last year's team that including Janai, who had better numbers. But no, that's a good point, Philly, that you know, the posts for Auburn when teams could get past Auburn's perimeter defense, you had guys like Janai and Dylan and Chaney that were able to hold their own around the basket. Now, I do think that last year's team also had some excellent perimeter defenders, right? Guys like Denver and Miles and Chad made it a lot tougher for teams to get the ball inside. But no, this year it's, I mean, that was the first thing I said when I walked in, Philly. The problem last night and the problem during this stretch seems to be how easily the ball gets into the paint. And Auburn's defense is, you know, the idea of a strong defense wanting to make things as tough as possible before, you know, to even get the ball in to the paint. And teams are getting the ball into the paint. It's getting back outside for a three, or they're getting an open shot around the basket. It's just it's too easy every time teams come down the floor.
You know, it's not rocket science. Basketball is basically in and out, in and out. You keep throwing it until one or the other, either the inside guy or the outside guy, is open. And the other thing is, I think that Hall and a number of Auburn guys, they dribble too much. You know, it's like they're not whipping it around to find an open man. And, you know, I see Hall, he wants to dribble until he can get by somebody and get fouled. And that's basically what he does. But you got to have something other than that. Right now, you have three guys that can score, and if one guy gets out for some reason or another, either or he has foul trouble, then you only have two, and then you can double up on the others. I mean, when I guess it was a few games back when one of the Auburn guards was, then he has to shoot threes, and if they're not going in, then you know Auburn's in a heap of trouble. And as I said before, if you're only playing six, seven guys, and one or two are not on, then what do? I mean, there's no one that can come in and pick them up.
No, there's a lot of work. I mean, not just talking about like what can be done between now and the end of the season. There's a lot of work to be done this offseason on this roster, and that's going to be the case. I mean, look, maybe some guys can make compelling arguments between now and the end of the year that they need to, but it seems like the rest of this season seems pretty uncertain, and what they do in the offseason seems pretty uncertain as far as what they're gonna what they're gonna need to do to improve on this team for next year.
To me, Auburn's NIT bound. I don't see them getting in. Or, you know, I really don't. It just all the other thing. You know, if they get 16-16 or even 17-15, you know, it used to be you had to get anywhere between 18 and 20 games.
Usually around 20. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 20. And they're nowhere near that. So sure, they played better teams up front, but that didn't translate to better play in the end. And like last year, they played all these teams that were top two and three, and I think it helped them down the stretch. But this year, playing those big teams didn't really help them at all, because they're not actually, if anything, they're sliding. And I think it's in their head right now. Really, I mean, it's just like almost like they really give up.
Yeah, I think last year's team, Philly, I think was ready from the very big, because they played together, right? Like last year's team brought back a bunch of experienced.
Yeah, they bring in Miles. And Tahad were the new pieces.
But there was a ton of continuity from last year's team. That team that lost to Yale basically came back intact, and you added a couple pieces to it, and so they were ready to take on the toughest schedule in Auburn history. This year's team, I heard one of the bracketologists sort of making that point that like Auburn scheduled in 2026 like they were still the 2025 Auburn Tigers, and they're not. Like this team is considerably different, and took, I mean, they took their lumps to the point where, yeah, you could be talking about 11 quad one losses before the season.
The other thing
over.
I see the other teams do is when there's a timeout, they bring out five chairs, right? And the coach is in there and he's got a board and he's working in plays. I don't see Auburn doing that. It's just like, okay, maybe the coaches talk to one guy and say, okay, you got to do this play or that play. I like the idea of having the chairs there, and then the people who aren't playing, they can look over and see what's going on.
That's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that, Joe.
You watch it. Every team
has
the chairs.
Occasionally you'll see Burgo drawing stuff up, right? But I think by and large, you're right. I mean, that's not something you see as often in Auburn's huddle.
Yeah, the other thing is Auburn, when they're taking the ball out under the basket, last year it seemed like they always had a play where the guy was open, at least underneath, and they got points. How often has Auburn taken the ball out near the basket and made points?
Well, how often did you hear, though, the commentators talking about Bruce Pearl was one of, if not the best, at defending and inbounds? Mm-hmm. I mean, that Auburn was deadly getting the ball in under the basket and defending under the basket.
But Bruce would usually give a lot of the offensive credit to Burgo, right?
Right?
I mean, Bruce would Bruce
was known for that before.
That's true.
Burgo was
when you last year, especially like when you gave credit on baseline out of bounds plays, Bruce was very quick to sort of defer and give that credit to his staff. So it is interesting that his absence is seemingly felt in that aspect of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, they're going to have to make a lot of changes after the season and figure out what went right and what went wrong, and then bring in players that can fill in and do the things that the other players weren't doing. You know, you got to get people in there that can score and, you know, move the ball around. And I don't know what's going to happen to Pettiford. I don't see him translating into the pros at all. I think if he goes to G League, he's stuck.
I wonder if in this day and age, I wonder if sort of fringe NBA players are better off exhausting their eligibility
as much
as possible. Yeah. Like, I mean, we'll see, but I wouldn't be shocked at all. I don't know if it's going to be at Auburn or not, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if Tahad's still playing college basketball next year.
Yeah. To me, he might even have to go to Europe someplace. The other thing is,
you're better off staying in college basketball. You should not. You should not leave with eligibility on the table in this. Like 10 years ago, 10 years ago, you probably wanted to leave college basketball even for professional opportunities in Europe. A guy now with 2 years left of eligibility would be foolish to leave that on the table to go try to earn money professionally overseas.
Yeah, and I think the Nigerian they brought in, he's too skinny to me. He's a second teamer at best. And you got to bring in some guys that have some beef, you know, because they're going to get pushed around. And I don't think they should go with these mighty 6'1 players anymore. I think they shouldn't have anyone less than 6'4. Because, you know, if your big guys underneath aren't doing it, you're going to have to get some help from your front court. And they don't have either.
Yeah, of course. And you've got to fit that into whatever budget that you have, however much you have to spend on that roster.
Yeah. All right. Well, it was good talking to you. And hopefully they'll win, beat Ole Miss.
Boy, they desperately need to. There's no question about it. Great hearing from you.
There could be some booing.
Oh, yeah.
All right, bye.
No, he's not wrong about that.
I think Auburn did enjoy a lot of success with point guards Tahad's size, right? Yeah. I mean, there is, you know, going back to Jared even. Like, I mean, you don't want to be. I don't think you want the overall position group to be small.
Yeah.
Right. Like if you have an undersized point guard, you need to think about that when you decide like who else is going to be in the backcourt. And you maybe need to prioritize defense a little bit more at some of those other spots. But no, Tahad's going to be one of several questions because we're back where we were last year, where he's got options, and we'll see what he decides to do when the season's over.
I think he's worth at least making the pitch because obviously, right, it's up to him wherever he goes. But I think with what he's kind of shown you down the stretch, because even though last night I think looked like a stinker top to bottom for pretty much everybody, with the exception of Kevin Overton, I think he's shown you enough that, like, obviously he shined last year when he was around a bunch of pieces, but I think he has shown you enough on both ends of the floor that, like, if you can bring in the right pieces and build around him, like, I think he's worth bringing back, especially for the sake of continuity. And then when you look at that, the other three guys that I see on this roster that are like, you need to try to bring them back. And obviously offseason development is going to be crucial, but Sway, Elijah Freeman and Jovic, I think that's kind of to me, that's your bedrock on this roster. You know, guys who are young and, you know, at least for those last three, certainly there needs to be a little more development there, but get that bedrock in place, and if you can bring Tahad back, I think that's a positive as much as in the moment a lot of people may not see it that way, but that needs to be your starting point to me of building that roster next year is those four guys.
All right, we need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind things down here on the Wednesday Drive.
Auburn IT delivers professional IT support to businesses across
the Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final few minutes. Yeah, we're just talking a little baseball here. Auburn West Georgia is coming up over at Plainsman Park here in just a few minutes. Over, and you can listen to it on Wings 94.3. It'll be Dre Alvarez on the mound. Yeah, we're just talking a little bit about the options, the depth that Butch Thompson and his staff have on this roster. It's deeper than any I can recall.
Yeah, no, and it's I think the last time I was on talked a little bit about this, but it's like every year the preseason expectation, I just like I lean less and less into that because every year the roster looks deeper, it looks more talented, mm-hmm. and how does that really stack up in the SEC? But you're right.
This looks like a top 10 team.
It does. It really does, and just the weird, you know, granted, like, it's a blessing considering the injury was not more significant, but the weird sort of silver lining blessing that you got from Chris Rembert getting sidelined and the emergence of Bristol Carter and what he did in that leadoff spot, you know, we were just talking about it, but it's like when you get Rembert back, presumably, you know, in the next week or so, like, you put him at that leadoff spot and suddenly you've got another bona fide leadoff man that you can put at the bottom of the order and flip that lineup. It's I don't know. I'm very excited to see where this team goes because you're right. It's deeper than I can remember it being.
Adam, let everybody know about you know, the work you do and how they can follow it there at the Advertiser.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going straight to the source, just head to MontgomeryAdvertiser.com and click sports at the top and hit that Auburn drop down. And if you're looking for me on Twitter, TikTok, social media, wherever, that's at Cole Reporter. My last name, C-O-L-E, and the word reporter.
Great, man. Thanks again.
Great job, Adam.
Looking forward to these Wednesdays with Adam. Dan, see you for an hour.
Yeah, I'll be back. I will be back on Monday. Before I head to Pensacola at the end of next week. But in the meantime, have a good time without me, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Good luck. And Don will be back in tomorrow. Justin will be in tomorrow. We'll talk to David Pascal. Have a good one, everybody. We're out of here. Experience.